Hey, folks, and welcome back to the Dev Influencer Show. I'm your host, Charles Max Wood. And before we get started, I just want to call out, if you're interested in becoming a Dev Influencer, go to devinfluencers.com. That's devinfluencers with an S.com. If you want to check out more podcast episodes, devinfluencers.com/podcast. This will also be up on YouTube, so you can go check it out there. But yeah, let's go ahead and get started. Last time I talked a bit about why you should become a dev influencer. We talked a bit about long-term goals for your career, right? And how becoming a dev influencer will help you reach those. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the shorter-term benefits to this to you. And then there's a third part of this as far as the benefits to the community, because those are out there as well, right? If you're not serving your community, you're not going to build the kind of audience that you want. And to be honest, people can smell that a mile away. And that's not the kind of influencer that I want to be out there building up and training. So just putting all that out there, right? You can listen to the show. You can take. You can try and build that influence. And I still won't let you in the accelerator if you're just interested in building an audience so you can exploit it for your own personal stuff. But it won't work anyway. So, you know. Anyway, so let's talk about some of those shorter term benefits. So some of the other shorter term benefits that you will get as an influencer, some of the things that just come out of being out there relentlessly serving your audience and then building an audience, right? I mean, you do get the sort of notoriety and things like that, right? People will start to know who you are. They'll start talking about you and things like that. I want to, though, kind of harken back to early in my podcasting career, right? So when I started podcasting, it was in 2008. I had graduated from college in December of 2006, and I had been working for a company called Mosey for about three, four months. I was one of the tech support guys. I was employee number 10 or 11 in the company. They started out with a few million dollars in funding. So yeah, they were paying my bills, paying the salary, bought a house, had two kids. I can't remember if my second daughter was born. I guess it was 2006. So she was born right after that. So I had one and two thirds kids at the time. But yeah, so I started podcasting in 2008. And I interviewed Greg Pollock, who had been podcasting for a while. He had a podcast called Rails Envy, and I had been listening to his podcast, and I definitely had the envy. I was listening to the podcast because I had just gotten into Ruby on Rails and really, really enjoyed the podcast. And so I actually emailed him and reached out, and I was like, hey, I really love your show. He and Jason Cypher. Jason passed away a few years ago. I think it was in a boating accident, if I remember right, which is really sad. But anyway, I really loved their show. They just talked about Ruby on Rails news, which was awesome. And yeah, so I emailed him and I was like, I want to start a podcast. And I had been programming professionally at that point for approximately no years, right? I was the support guy. I was the support guy at Mosey for a year or so. And then I ran the support department. I guess I took over and we started hiring people, and I started running the tech support department when Tom, who was the guy that hired me, moved into kind of a technical support for sales, something or other role. I can't remember exactly what they called that role, but he moved on. I was running tech support, hired a bunch more people. I was in that position for about a year, year and a half. And then I moved into QA and found podcasting. At the time, we were using Ruby on Rails to write a system that would allow us to pull emails out of the email inbox and put them in a database so that we could work through them more quickly, right? Because we could lock an email for a certain length of time, and that way we weren't trying to answer the same emails over and over, which between Tom and I was actually kind of a problem. Because we were both working in Thunderbird and it didn't indicate that he and I had opened the same email kind of thing. So that's initially how it got started. And then as we had more people on, then it just became a necessity, right? We put canned responses and stuff like that in it. And things kind of grew over time, fell in love with Ruby on Rails, started listening to the podcast. And so I interviewed Greg, and I wound up going to my first RubyConf. And I think I just paid my own way. And I heard a speaker named James Edward Gray speak and invited him to come on the show. And he was a fairly well-known Rubyist at the time. And I was a fairly unknown Rubyist at the time because I was brand new and really hadn't done anything professionally at all. I don't think I was even on the radar as a professional developer. I had contributed one video to Teach Me to Code, which was a video series done by my friend Eric Berry. And so I just reached out to him and said, hey, do you want to come on this podcast I'm starting? And he said, yeah. And so I interviewed him, and I sucked at interviewing. I really sucked at interviewing. So he came on, and I interviewed him. And he actually sent me an email a little later and said, hey, I was interviewed on this other podcast, and they did a way better job than you did, and here are some pointers. Right? But, you know, Greg was well-known in the Ruby community. James was well-known in the Ruby community. Just about everybody else I interviewed on that show was well-known in the Ruby community. Greg actually suggested to me that I interview people because it was a completely different format from what he was doing. The Ruby on Rails format or podcast at the time, which was done by Jeffrey Grossenbach, incidentally, was also interview format. But I mean, there were so many people and there was so much going on in the Rails community that it was hardly likely that we were going to be interviewing the same people every week. I mean, even if we wound up interviewing the same person the same week, on any given week, the likelihood that we were going to do it again week after week was just minuscule. So, you know, that's what I did. And anyway, it turned out to be a really, really terrific thing and turned into this really awesome way for me to learn. And so if you're looking for mentorship, you could do a whole lot worse than starting a podcast and inviting the people on who are the experts in the stuff you need or want to learn. And then interviewing them, right? And so that's one short-term benefit is just that, right? I mean, longer term, some of the other things that came out of it, you know, besides that, I became fairly well-known fairly quickly, at least in my local community, right? Because I would show up and talk to people and I would interview local people. And so they became kind of minor celebrities within the wider Rails world, but I became a minor celebrity within the local Rails world. And that happened relatively quickly as well as I talked to people within the local Rails world because they were people who knew stuff that I didn't, right? And that worked out pretty well as well. It also opened me up to some of the ideas that allowed me to get my first Rails job because I'd showed up at this... I showed up. I was actually applying for QA jobs, right? So let me back up a little bit. I was working QA. I think I started that podcast after I got my first job, now that I think about it. I need to check timelines on that. But yeah, I think I started it just after I started the QA job. It might have been. I need to double check. Anyway, but I was consistently talking to people. And I know I did the video before I switched jobs for Teach Me to Code. But because I was going to the users groups and things like that. But anyway, and I had reached out to Greg before I left Mosey. And so I think I was geared up because I think I switched jobs right around the same time I started the podcast. And I remember recording that podcast at my kitchen table at home with this microphone that was just set up on a mic stand. You know, my wife had my two little kids upstairs. I think my kids had gone to bed at that point. But yeah, record my first podcast episode, kitchen table in our little house over in Saratoga Springs, Utah. But anyway, so where was I? Yeah. So anyway, so I went into that first interview and, you know, I had already been exposed to some of these ideas and had already been talking to people by the time that came around. And so Even though I didn't know the names of the concepts that I was being asked about, once I had them explained to me by Nate Hopkins, who was a host on Ruby Rogues for a while, I was able to turn around and explain to him where they applied in what was going on in Ruby on Rails, and was able to actually land my first Ruby on Rails job because of that. The second job that I got right after that, you know, so I was there for a year and then they laid me off. They laid me off on our third or fourth wedding anniversary. I went home and applied to some jobs. I got a job interview and I showed up and I was able to answer all of their interview questions. Turned out I actually knew more about Rails than the guy interviewing me, because by then I had been doing screencasts and podcasts. I'd been producing both. And when I walked out the door, he actually went and checked out the podcast and the screencasts and called me back before I got home and asked me when I could start. And the answer was tomorrow, because I had been laid off that morning. So I was literally unemployed for about 6 hours. So that's another benefit that comes from that, is that it makes it exceptionally easy for people to vet you and know that you're capable of doing the job. My friend John Sanmez, he did it with blogging. And the difference is that he actually just got called up and offered a job, and it was a better job than the one he had. So he actually just switched jobs. So that's another short-term benefit that comes to that. I got called up by a guy named James, and invited to come speak at a conference in Vancouver, Washington. And he convinced the organizer of the conference, it was a conference called DevTeach, to tack on a Ruby track last minute onto the conference. And so then he asked me if I knew people who could come and do the other tracks or the other sessions on that track. So I got a whole bunch of my friends to come up and do the other tracks. This was after we had been doing Ruby Rogues for a while. And then I was invited to be on a panel that was being put together by the .NET Rocks podcast, and got to meet... I'm giving away, and I'll do all these stories in more details, but just to give you an idea, I got invited to a conference that actually got me onto a panel. That panel turned into an opportunity to, over 5 or 6 years, go to pretty much every Microsoft build, Microsoft Ignite over several years, and Microsoft Connect while they were doing it over those same years. So, and Microsoft paid for my airfare, hotel, and basically food. And they gave me a ticket to the conference, and the tickets to the conferences are $1,000 or so too. So I was able to get access to that. I mean, just all kinds of opportunities come out of these besides, the connection of the conference and the community and things like that. Adventures in Angular did, lunchtime, episodes during ng-conf for years and years. I mean, some of that came out of the fact that two of the organizers were panelists on the show, and the show was local here in Salt Lake. But still, you know, they gave me a ticket and let me in. But yeah, a lot of these opportunities just came out of things like that. Even early on, ApacheCon gave me a ticket and got me a hotel room. I just had to pay for my airfare up to Vancouver for that in 2011. And that was when I was doing Teach Me to Code. Which was just a solo show, just me. And so there are all of these benefits that come out of it just from being connected to people, getting to know them, you know, giving them a chance to get exposed to your audience, and then giving your audience what they want by allowing these people to share their expertise with them. And so I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, before it was long-term benefits is going to get you where you want to go, but short-term benefits, you also have all of these other opportunities come to you. You know, I've been invited to actually speak at conferences as well, right? It's like, hey, I know you're, you know, within driving distance of our conference. Do you want to come, right? Or I would just, you know, contact the conference and they'd give me a media pass and let me come out to their event, right? And, you know, so many opportunities to just come. You know, GitLab paid for me to come out to their event in Portland, right? And they just called me out of the blue and offered, right? I didn't even apply. So yeah, just opportunity after opportunity after opportunity have come my way over the years, just from having the podcast and being out there and being a voice within the community that is trusted and gives my audience what they need, folks want to be a part of that. And so that is another short-term benefit to having this kind of influence. And I should just talk through some of those opportunities, and I probably will later, but I just want to give you a feel for, hey, look, you know, if you're looking to get more involved in the community and have some of these opportunities show up for you, a podcast or being an influencer in some of these ways is a terrific, terrific way to go. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up here. I kind of rambled a little bit there in the middle, but I hope you get the point, right? So the long-term benefit is it'll get you where you want to go. The short-term benefit is that you will have people come to you with these short-term opportunities that you can take advantage of, or help you find short-term job opportunities, give you security, and give you opportunities to be able to get where you want to go. I mean, even when things slowed down during COVID, right? I just put feelers out to see what was out there, and pretty much immediately had a job. I showed up to the job interview and basically sat down with the people interviewing me, and they said, so we like your podcast. And then we sat there and BS'd until it was time to go. And then they offered me a job. So, you know, it really does. There are a lot of other benefits to being this kind of an influencer. And it's really just down to being a trusted source out there. So next time I'll talk a little bit more about the kind of audience trust and the benefit that I get from just interacting with the audience. And then we'll start talking about how you do it, okay? How you actually start becoming that influencer, that trusted source out there, all right? So until next time, max out.